Welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Stephen Spitz. Today we focus on the U.S.'s relationship with Mexico and Latinos and ask, will President Trump's border wall work? And what's the real reason for the mass deportation and his threat to exit NAFTA? To help put this in context, we are joined by historian and leading borderland scholar, Dr. Elliot Young. Elliot Young, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Elliot, I'd like to spend most of our time on the specific issues I just mentioned, mass deportations, the wall, and exiting NAFTA. But based on your recent book, Alien Nation, and as an historian, do you have an overall take on what's going on?
Well, the broader view is that ever since the late 19th century, when the first federal immigration restrictions were enacted, Chinese Exclusion Act, the government has tried over time to strengthen the border through putting more border patrol agents on the border, militarizing the border, increasing deportations. And the policies, although they have an effect on the immigrants in this country, and they do ratchet up detentions and deportations, don't really affect the number of immigrants coming to this country. And so what you see
legal
is
or illegal, you're saying?
They illegal, right.
Illegal.
People coming in clandestinely, because the factors that are attracting them here and pushing them out of their own countries are largely economic or have to do with political instability. And there is no way really to completely protect thousands of miles of land borders, not to mention all of the coastlines. And beyond that, more than half of the people presently in the country who are undocumented come in on legal visas and simply overstay their visas.
But it seems like there's something even deeper going on, which is the other, the alien, to take a name out of your book, that there's this sort of rejection, this idea of the alien as criminal, the alien as invader, the alien as destroying our culture or taking our culture or not being true to our culture. Do you think that's going on, or is that just me overreacting?
No, I mean, and I didn't invent this term alien. This comes from the sort of popular culture, as well as it being a legal term that was used to define people who are non-citizens. But the way in which that term gets deployed, it has a history of racism. And so there are particular groups against whom it gets deployed who are seen as not only alien in the sense of non-citizens, but what they used to call unassimilable population. So the Chinese were the first of this group who were seen as, you know, no matter how long they were in this country, simply because of their cultural beliefs, their race, they were not going to be able to assimilate and become U.S. citizens. And so they, in fact, made it illegal for Chinese and then all Asians to naturalize as U.S. citizens. And that restriction only ended in 1943 in the midst of World War II as part of a geopolitical strategy to try to get the Chinese were on our side fighting the war. But that idea of the alien then was used and applied for Mexicans, for socialists and communists and anarchists, other political radicals. And so, yeah, the idea of the other who is unassimilable, unable to become part of the American citizenry, you know, stretches right up till today. And we could see that very clearly in Trump's rhetoric about immigrants, which, and particular groups of immigrants, specifically Mexicans, seeing them as sort of bad criminal type people who, you know, should not be part of our country.
I think what surprises me is that, first of all, it doesn't seem to be at all true for Mexicans and Hispanics. They seem to assimilate well. And secondly, there didn't seem to be a lot of talk about this until the primary election. That is, there didn't seem to be some groundswell that Hispanics were not assimilating or couldn't assimilate or weren't part of our culture.
Well, there's been since the, you know, I think perennially in U.S. history, there's been this idea of Mexicans and Latinos as not fitting in. But certainly since the 1990s, there was this book by Samuel Huntington, a political scientist at Harvard, in which he argued that the Hispanic challenge was sort of a civilizational challenge to the United States, who he saw as Anglo and Protestant, and basically argued there is no, you know, Americano dream. There's only the American dream, and it had to be in English, and it had to be white and Protestant. And it was very clearly laid out. And so I think those have been the undertones that were there. But politicians on both Republican and the Democratic side tempered some of the worst xenophobic, racist language until Donald Trump sort of, you know, opened that up and made it, if not respectable, at least possible for, I think, the most nationalist elements in the country to start speaking in this language, which is just blatantly racist.
Let's talk about deportations specifically now. You know, we've got a lot of people integrated into our economy, integrated into our culture. As you've already indicated, crime is lower, actually, in that immigrant community than generally. It seems completely counterproductive. And yet we're mobilizing this huge, you know, deportation force. President Trump's what, 10,000 more ICE agents. Maybe it's just the same question I asked before, but what's going on here? It doesn't appear to make any sense.
Well, I think this was part of Trump's campaign promise to his supporters, and he was appealing to a population who has generally suffered under neoliberalism, the sort of free trade policies that have been followed since the 1980s, Democrats and Republicans alike. And rather than blaming the conditions of the economy on that economic system, it's very easy to scapegoat and target immigrants in this country and saying, this is the reason why you as the white working class are not doing well. It's because Mexicans and Central Americans and others are stealing your jobs. But we have to sort of see this in the broader perspective that deportation and detention of immigrants really starts to explode in the 1980s and through the 1990s, through the Clinton years. But then it really takes off, deportations take off under Obama. And in the last, you know, the 8 years of Obama, there were 2.5 to 3 million people who were deported, which is an unprecedented number. It's really basically the number of people deported under Obama is equivalent to all of the other people deported in the history of the United States. And one of the things that people say is, well, this is different now because Obama focused on non-criminals and Trump is, you know, basically said he's going to deport everyone. But the truth is that if you look at the data on who was deported under Obama, more people without any criminal charges were deported than people with criminal charges. So I think that what Trump is doing is ratcheting up an enforcement system and an immigration bureaucracy that was really put in place over the last 30 years and strengthened by Obama.
So I have a follow-up question, but I wanted to just take a short break. We'll be back in 30 seconds. You are listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitzer. We're very pleased to have via Skype Professor Elliot Young, and he's the author of a recent book called Alienation, and we'll be back in 30 seconds. We are back on New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz. And Elliot, you know, what's really fascinating to me, I think that's exactly right. You know, what you just said about Obama's mass deportations. I mean, there were an incredible number, and they weren't focused on felons, so to speak, until quite recently. We're applying all these labels to President Trump, and supposedly Obama did it sort of to prove to Republicans that, you know, he could be trusted, that he could get comprehensive immigration reform because he was deporting people and he was adding security to the border. And arguably, Trump's just doing the same exact thing, sort of what you said.
Well, I mean, I would say that one needs to sort of recognize the truth about what Obama did and the fact that the rhetoric of targeting criminals wasn't true. On the other hand, I would say that there is a shift under Trump, and we'll see how that plays out. But so far, in terms of the executive orders and the guidance that he's given and the Department of Homeland Security has given, they have expanded their list of priorities to basically anyone, not only who has been charged with a crime, but who is ostensibly could be charged with a crime.
Right.
So it really basically is saying everyone except the DACA, the students or the young people who were part of that program for temporary relief that was put in place by Obama, which are about 750,000 people. So the other 10 million plus immigrants are priorities for the Trump administration. And so I think, you know, that combined with the fact that they're going to be hiring 10,000 more Border Patrol agents and the kind of rhetoric that they're using, the fact that they're doing these very public raids and picking up not only the people that they're looking for, but the so-called collateral people, anyone they find, suggests that it was terrible and now it's likely to be a lot worse. So I think that there is cause for alarm.
Yeah, definitely cause for alarm. And actually, I think I have a very similar question about the border wall. I mean, the border wall supposedly could cost as much as $22 billion, and that doesn't include all the technology, all the border agents, all the whatever that goes along with all the surveillance costs that go along with the border. $22 billion, and yet we know that net immigration from the United States to Mexico is is actually positive. Net immigration into the United States is net negative. So again, you know, on the surface, none of this makes any sense. So are we simply back to the same, you know, we're picking out this group, we're saying they don't belong, and we're making sort of a cultural statement as much as anything else?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the border wall, well, first of all, you know, it's not as if there is not a border wall now already. They're,
right.
Under Bush, they began to build a wall. There are fences in many places along the border. It's a very highly militarized region. But it's a fantasy to believe that you could build this wall and that the wall would be effective in stopping immigrants from crossing. So
why do you say that? Why are you so convinced of that?
Because every attempt that they've made to build walls has been circumvented by immigrants who are either go over the wall or go under it or go around it. And the fact that most immigrants who come in and are undocumented come in, fly in on visas. So the wall's not going to stop that at all. So I think the wall is something which Trump has promised to do. His base wants him to do it, and he's going to say he's going to do it. I would be very surprised if at the end of his 4 years or less, if he doesn't last that long, that there's actually a wall built along the whole border, just simply because the cost and the logistics of doing it are very high, and it's not clear where the money's coming from.
Now, one thing I thought of preparing for the show is that Israel's wall with the West Bank has been very successful. Now, that's not nearly the same length. It doesn't have all the same problems that this border wall would have, but that seems to have worked fairly effectively in Israel. In fact, I don't think there have been any instances of attacks by West Bankers into Israel since that wall went up.
Well, I would say that, it depends what you mean by effective. Certainly the situation trying to resolve the conflict between
Oh,
Palestinians
yeah, I'm not talking about
and
the merits.
Israelis is not going to be solved by a wall.
Right.
And, there continue to be tensions and hostilities and attacks that go on within Israel and Israelis in Palestinian territories. So I think that a wall can prevent some people from crossing, but it's also a vastly different scale when you're talking about the US-Mexico border, versus the kind of smaller scale in Israel. But I think there's a larger question of beyond the logistics of it, is what is the message that a wall sends to the rest of the world and to Mexico and the rest of Latin America? And I think it sends the message that we want to wall ourselves off from the rest of the world, and that seems to be not the kind of message that the United States should send. And it really hasn't been the best aspect of this country, I think, has been this idea of the country as a country of immigrants. And the economy has benefited from that, the culture has benefited from that, and I think at our own peril, we wall ourselves off from the rest of the world.
Well, the pro-wall people say, there's crime on the border, drugs are coming in, we need to stop terrorists, we need a wall. The country can't exist without borders, and we don't have borders
Well,
because this wall, it's easy. It's not easy anymore. It's actually very difficult, but it's possible to cross the border without documents.
it's possible to cross the border without documents, and I think that's going to continue to be true. That doesn't mean, I would argue that there are borders. Anyone who's, been down to the border sees that it's very apparent that there are obstacles in the way to people crossing. And so the borders exist. There are other ways to respond to the drug trafficking problem than through a wall and through militarization. And that, they've tried that. The drug war started under Ronald Reagan, and they've poured billions of dollars into preventing drugs from coming into the country, and it hasn't made any impact at all. The way to stop drugs from coming to the country is on the demand side.
Yeah, the cartels seem to stay one jump ahead, and my understanding is that in terms of the importation to the United States of heroin or meth, which are the most profitable drugs for the cartels, I mean those basically come in legally. Either they're flown in or they're driven in. They're, not openly, but they're sneaked in, and the wall isn't going to have any effect on those.
Right, they've got submersible submarines. I mean, this is an industry which is, highly profitable, billions and billions of dollars. So a wall is not going to stop someone who is trying to get drugs into the country.
So what about terrorism? I mean, the idea is, we're now there hasn't been any example that I can think of where someone has crossed the southern border and done anything that one would call terrorism in the United States. But the argument is, well, they could cross and they could get in and they could commit a terrible act here.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the argument, but there's no evidence, as you say, that that has happened. And if you look at the 2016 Department of Homeland Security statistics, out of the four over 100, 415,000 people that the Border Patrol apprehended, 0.02% of them were suspected of being related to terrorism. So 94% of the people apprehended were simply people crossing the border who were crossing to look for jobs. So the idea that we're erecting, creating all this border security for the handful of people who may be coming across to commit terrorist acts is just laughable when you look at actually who's being caught up in the system. And when we know that the people who do come in from outside the country to commit terrorist acts all have come in on legal visas.
Now, it's quite easy to get in that way.
Right. So there's, you know, I guess you could argue, well, we should shut down all immigration, legal immigration to the country. And then you still have the problem that the most of the terrorist acts are actually committed by people who are U.S. citizens. So, you know, there's the argument about terrorism, but as the Ninth Circuit said when it reviewed Trump's ban on the seven countries, Muslim-majority countries, there's no evidence that the kind of policies that Trump is pursuing are directed at the people who are likely to, or who have in the past, been the ones to commit terrorist acts.
We need to take another quick break. We'll be back in 30 seconds. We are back on New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and I'm very pleased to have via Skype Professor Elliot Young. And Elliot, I want to talk briefly about NAFTA. I mean, here, actually, you get sort of critics in both Mexico and in the United States. And in the United States, you get critics at both ends of the political spectrum that have criticized this trade agreement. And maybe before we get into it, maybe you could just briefly describe what NAFTA is.
So NAFTA is a free trade agreement which went into effect on January 1st, 1994, between Canada, the United States, and Mexico. And essentially, it's reducing tariffs for trade between these three countries at the same time as it did not include any provisions for the free movement of labor. So it's basically an agreement to allow for goods and commodities to cross borders more easily.
One of the curious things, this is really true of the whole campaign, the primary and the general election by President Trump. It's very unclear what he wants to do about NAFTA or what exactly his criticism of NAFTA is. He says he wants to get a better deal for American workers. But how one would do that is unclear. Do you have ideas on that? How would one get a better deal for American workers?
Yeah, I'm not sure what he has in mind. I mean, I think that the one thing that I might agree with Donald Trump about is that NAFTA was a bad deal for workers in certain manufacturing sectors of the United States. It was also a bad deal for certain sectors in Mexico. It destroyed the agricultural sector. There is a critique of NAFTA from both a left perspective as well as, I think, the Donald Trump perspective is more just seeing it as, that it was a bad deal for the United States. But it doesn't seem like he is in renegotiating this deal would actually be trying to create a fair deal for workers on both sides of the border. I think what he would be doing is looking to protect, you know, American workers, American jobs. To the extent that he's doing that by sort of creating this border tax, which he's talked about, that would worsen the economic crisis in Mexico and is likely to spur more immigration. So like you said, we're at a moment where there's either zero net immigration from Mexico or negative immigration. Trump's plans to renegotiate NAFTA, Trump's plans to build this wall, to establish a border tax, are likely to have the opposite effect that he wants it to have, which is to increase Mexican immigration to the United States.
So, whatever the deal was in 1994, what has evolved is a complex series of integrations between Mexican maquiladoras and United States businesses. And at this point, if you were to walk away and sort of say no more, it seems like it would have a disastrous effect on both countries. On well, it would have a more it would be worse for Mexico because Mexico doesn't have the same doesn't have as big an economy as the United States has, but it would not do well for the United States either, would it?
No, I mean, as you say, many of the companies that are building things in Mexico or the maquiladoras on the border are owned by U.S. companies, so they stand to lose as much as the Mexican companies would stand to lose. So it's going to have an impact, especially on those border cities that really depend on. On the U.S. side, that depend on the manufacturing sector and the sort of growth of the cities on the Mexican side. As we know, these cities are oftentimes they're two different cities because they're two different countries, but they're really one economic unit. And historically, they were one city that then got divided by a border line. So. The Trump plan is likely to devastate the economies of the U.S. border
I
towns.
mean, here we're very close to El Paso, Texas, obviously, which is like the center for Juarez, right? There's
Right.
all kinds of cross-border traffic. And Santa Teresa, New Mexico, is one of the few bright spots in the New Mexican economy. So were that to be, were the United States to leave NAFTA or even to sort of change the sort of the amount of U.S. product, the amount of original U.S. equipment that qualifies for free trade, all that would have a very negative effect on New Mexico, Texas, and all the companies along the border, and the workers. The workers would no longer have jobs.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the many of the people who voted for Donald Trump are likely to be in for a surprise when they lose the affordable care that they have now under the Obama plan, when these economic policies go into effect and affect them directly in a negative way. I think they're going to have a wake-up call and realize that maybe immigrants aren't their problem. Maybe their problem is located elsewhere.
I'm sorry to say we're out of time. Thanks to my guest, Dr. Elliot Young. Thanks also to my engineer, Roman Garcia. The executive producer of this show is Lynn Shebeki. You have been listening to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas on KUNM. My name is Stephen Spitz. Podcasts of this show are downloadable on iTunes. Search Stephen Spitz. Archives of past shows are at stephenspitz.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.